episode of My New Life. Thank you guys so much for coming back. Thank you guys so much for listening. First off, just want to say a huge thank you to all of you listeners. It's so amazing the amount of support I've been getting and just the motivation to keep on going. So again, thank you so much for all your support. And I hope you guys are picking up new pieces of info, new pieces of learning through this podcast. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about January 25th, 2022. January 25th, 2022. It's a very important day in my life. Very important day in my life. You guys might be asking, what is this? What day is this? January 25th, 2022 was the day of my accident. It was the day I was hit by a car. So today's episode, we're going to be talking about the story of me being in the hospital. Very, very, very crazy story this is. For both my journey and for the people that were involved in it. And I'm so excited to give you guys my story. This has been a topic that I wanted to talk to people about ever since I got back from the hospital. Traumatic brain injury is an injury that I didn't know existed. Other than a concussion, I thought that was it. How wrong I was. So today's episode, we're going to be talking about my story of being in the hospital. January 25th, 2022. That day started off with me having an amazing morning. I was starting my second semester of sophomore year at my old university, University of St. Catherine. And I think it was my first or second day. It was my second day. And I'm pretty sure I had a class at 8:30 in the morning, 8:30. And so I went to that class and it was good. I think it was a management class. Wasn't a big fan of management, wasn't a big fan of business, but I took it. Go me. But yeah, I took that class in the morning and I got back home. And I got back home, I should say, I think like 9:30. And I wanted to go on a run when I got home. I had a very, very severe runner's high. What that means is I was kind of addicted to running to the point where I needed to run 8 miles every day in order to feel good about myself, feel productive, which is absolutely crazy, crazy, but that was my life. That was my life. So at 10, I got ready to go. And I left to go on my run. The next thing that I realized, I was in the hospital. I was so confused. I was so confused because all I remember was I left my house to go on a run and then I wake up in the hospital. That made no sense. That made no sense to me. Before I get into that, what happened was when I was running down my hill, I normally would look at the street to see if, you know, there was any cars that were passing, because me, the great decision that I made, I would run across the street. If there's not any cars, I'm just gonna make it. I'm just gonna go. Unfortunately, on that day, the one thing I remember is there were a bunch of cars parked on the side where I were to cross to the opposite side. And so, because the cars were parked there, I think there was like 3 or 4 cars, like more than normal. Normally, there's like one, maybe one car there. And I looked and I was like, all right, I don't see anything, so I'll cross. And boom. I'm blessed that I don't remember, but a car hit me on my left side. I was knocked out. I was unconscious. And in that moment, what I heard was the people around had no idea what to do. They were just watching and in complete shock. But one man, Neil Smith, he was working at a house right at the bottom of the street, and he heard a bang, and he was confused. He was wondering what is that, what happened. And Neil, he saw that there was someone laying in the street looking like he probably just got hit. He wanted to check and see if I was breathing. He said I was, and he stayed right by my side till the first responders came. And I'm so thankful for him, and my entire family is, to the point where now he gets invited to Christmas. He's probably going to come to Easter. He gets invited to all the family parties because he's a very, very special person to my entire family. Because he was the one who, instead of watching, instead of just looking, instead of just pulling out a phone and recording, he came up to me and made sure I was okay. It's really funny because when he talks to me about this, he noticed that a bunch of people just pulled out their phones and started recording, and I guess he looked up and he just went off on all of them, and he was like, why are you guys just recording? You guys are doing absolutely nothing. Like, just keep on going, just walk away. And like, I felt like that about it when he talks about it. I was like, dang, like that's right. But yeah, I'm Neil, if you're listening, thank you so much for just being right by my side. Just being that person who made sure I was okay. Made sure I was in a well enough state. So, like I said, Neil, he stayed with me until San Marcos first responders showed up. And again, another huge thank you to the San Marcos Fire Department, because as soon as they got to me, they knew I needed to be seen, and so they picked me up, they took me, and they took me to Palomar Hospital. It's in San Marcos, California. It's right between San Marcos and Escondido. I don't know whether to call it San Marcos or in Escondido, but it's like right in the middle. So they sent me to that hospital. And I'm so blessed that they were there like this. I'm pretty sure Neil said that it was two minutes, because one thing that was amazing, so helpful for me to, you know, make it to the hospital in time, is that they're like a minute drive from my house, so they're really close by. So again, thank you so much to those first responders on that day for coming and helping me get saved. I didn't know this because I was unconscious, but I guess my mom, on the group chat that me and my sister are in, she sent a text saying, hey, I just want to let you guys know, just be safe by our house, because I guess there was a pretty gnarly accident by our house. So just be careful and stay safe. She had no idea it was me. She just heard it that, all right, someone was hit, and she just wanted to let us know it was me. So I unfortunately was not able to read that message, but thank you, Mom, for sending that out. And the way that my mom found out was she got a message from my previous girlfriend, and her name is Adriana. Sup, Adriana, hope everything is well. But she texted my mom saying, "I think Ethan was hit by a car." One of the people on my soccer team at University of St. Catharines, so when I was at that old college before it shut down, I was on the soccer team. And so Adriana got a message from one of the players on my team, Sivas, what's up Sivas, that there was an accident by my house, and he thinks it was me who was in that accident. And so Adriana needed to let my mom know, and she did. So thank you for letting my mom know. And as soon as my mom found out that it was a high chance that it was me, she rushed over to, she didn't rush over to Palomar Hospital. She first called all the hospitals by my house, and she told them, she was like, is my son there? Is Ethan there? And Palomar Hospital said, we just got a new patient, a new person who needs quick emergency surgery. And so my mom put two and two together, and she rushed over to Palomar Hospital. Crazy mob for her, because she works in downtown San Diego. So she mobbed over there to the hospital, so to see if it was me. She had to go in to the room that I was in and identify that I was her son. Crazy. When I think of that, I think how strong of a mom she is. Because imagine having to go into a room where someone that you love is probably in there and probably looking like really bad, and having to see their face and having to say, "Yeah, that's my son," or "Yeah, that's my daughter." It takes a lot of heart to do that. A lot of heart. They told my mom he's gonna have to go to immediate surgery, like right now. And so she stayed, not in the room, but she just stayed at the hospital, and she just wanted to stay just to know what was happening with me. She told my family, and my friends found out, my family, everyone found out. And I'm so blessed to say that most of the people that I know went to that hospital to make sure my family was okay. And so to everyone who went to that hospital to check in on my parents and make sure they were okay, thank you. Because you guys were what my mom, my dad, my sister needed. At the time when my mom was notified by the doctors to come in and see me, my mom, my dad went into the hospital to see what happened. And they told them he has a really bad brain injury. Really bad brain injury, a TBI, which is a traumatic brain injury. Traumatic brain injury is an injury where the axons that are connecting from your brain to all the parts of your body, they get cut. And when they're cut, you lose the abilities that you have, whether that be cognitive abilities, whether that be motor control, movement, whether that be communication, speaking. Those could all be affected. Those are just some. But those, if those are cut, then you have to relearn how to do those functions. And my specific injury was a diffused axonal injury, which meant that there are a lot of different areas in your brain that have axons that can, that do certain abilities. And a diffuse axonal injury meant that instead of just one group of axons that were affected, that meant a lot of axons were affected, which many, many abilities being ruined and cut. And with that being said, my parents were asked if my sister wants to come in and see me. The thing I found out was the reason why my sister was able to come in to see me was because they didn't know if I would survive. And the reason why they wanted my sister come in is to possibly see me for the last time. It was to the point where the doctors asked my parents and my sister if they wanted a priest to come in to pray over me. Because again, they had no idea if I would make it. Let that just sit in for a minute. Imagine being told, if do you want to see this person right now? Because I'm not sure that this person is going to wake up tomorrow and say your goodbyes. That's gotta be so, so, so horrible to face. That's what my family, my mom, my dad, and my sister had to face on January 25th. On the day of my surgery, my neurosurgeon, Dr. Jaswani, and again, another big thank you to him, because I didn't find out until a couple months after. He doesn't work for Palomar Hospital. He was just there on that day to be a cover surgeon. He saved me, and he was there by chance. Oh man. How blessed I was on that day. How blessed. I was in a coma for a week and a half. So I don't really remember the first week and a half, 2 weeks. But what my mom did through my injury was she made a caring bridge, which is a website where you could leave messages for people to see of how something is going. And my mom made a caring bridge for me while I was in the hospital, just to let everyone know what was happening with me. So, with that being said, the reason why I'm able to talk about my entire time in the hospital is because she has everything on my caring bridge. So if you guys want to see that, I'll leave a link to it in the description so you guys could see what happened because I'm just going to give highlights from each day that I was there. But if you guys want to see everything that she talks about every single day, I will leave that in the description down below so that you guys could take a look. I was there for 5 days until she started, but she says that she recorded from day one, but the first 5 days were not kept for some reason. Maybe it didn't save. So the first day that I have starts on January 30th. On January 30th, my mom got my MRI results from Dr. Jaswani. And that's when he told my mom that I sustained a diffuse axonal injury. And he told her, if you don't know what it is, please don't look it up. Because a diffuse axonal injury is a very, very, very severe traumatic brain injury. On my MRI results, there were a lot of gray patches on the scan. These gray patches meant that they were not able to see what was really happening. So there was a lot of damage in my brain. And the doctors were not quite sure on what abilities I lost and what abilities I need to gain back because of all the gray patches that were on the MRI scan. My neurologist, his name was William Farnsworth. He gave my mom some hope, and he told her, Dana, that's my mom's name, said, Dana, I know this is a very severe injury, but I've seen people, I've worked with patients who fully recovered from it. And that allowed my mom to keep that hope. And so thank you, Dr. Farnsworth, for giving my mom some hope. The way that you're able to see the severity of the injury, it goes off of the Glasgow Coma Scale. What that scale, what it does, it scales whether you have a mild, a moderate, or a severe TBI, traumatic brain injury. And with my diffuse axonal injury, it is in the severe. So the three topics that the Glasgow Coma Scale identifies is your eye opening, your verbal response, and your motor response. The eye opening goes from 4 being it's good to 1 being there's no eye opening. For verbal response, it goes 5 to being okay, being functional, and 1 being there's no verbal response. Your motor response goes from 6 being you're able to move around to 1 being nothing. And even though these three groups go from the top rating to 1 and ending at 1 and stating that 1 means nothing, the amount of points that I had were 0. 0. So not even in the nones, like it was below none. So yeah, it was my injury was pretty bad. That's the information that my family gained on that day. On January 31st, I was still in a coma. I was moving around, and unfortunately with me, I play soccer. And with that being said, I always want to move around. The reason why the doctors found that very concerning is because not only was I moving around, but I was pulling on the tubes that were attached to me. The tubes being tracheotomy, and the IVs that were in my arm. Tracheotomy is a tube that was put into my neck. And what it does is it helps the patient breathe. And so I have this little, like, you can see when I swallow, it kind of gets sucked in. That was because I had a tracheotomy in my throat in order to keep me breathing. Because of that, the doctors had to strap me on to the bed and not allow me to move my arms because they did not want me to unplug certain tubes or pull out any tubes that were keeping me alive. So thank you, because I needed that. February 2nd, it's the next important day. I was removed from the ICU and put into the intermediate care unit. The difference between the ICU and the intermediate care unit is that the intensive care unit are for people that need high critical care and need someone always monitoring them just to make sure that everything's going good because they can't do it for themselves. Whereas the intermediate care unit, the place that I went to, it's a one step down from the care that I received at the ICU. So they knew that I kind of got my abilities back, but I still needed monitoring. So it was a good progression for me. So I was stoked. I don't remember, but I'm happy that happened. Because of my traumatic brain injury, I was getting fevers and my heart rate was bumping up and up and up. And the reason why that was occurring was because I was going under what's called as the neurostorming. The neurostorming is the overactive sympathetic nervous system response to TBI. So the symptoms that it gives are fevers, rapid heart rate, elevated blood pressure, and intense sweating. So because I was having high fevers and a high heart rate, then that allowed the nurses and the doctors to know, all right, he's suffering right now from neurostorming. The doctors understood that I would be having to deal with this for probably a week to 3 weeks. And with that being said, I need to take medication in order for that to be controlled. They identified that, and so I had the medications that kept me from overshooting the limits that I need to be on. Next day, February 3rd. I was, before my accident, I had a pretty glorious long set of hair that I grew up for probably a year and a half. And because they needed to do the surgery and I had cuts in my head, they had to shave it off. So all the work that I did for a year and a half was ruined. Sad times, such sad times for me. I lost my glorious long set of hair. But yeah, that needed to happen in order for my swelling to be covered. At that time, only one parent can visit me at a time because at that time, COVID was still a big thing and they didn't want anyone to get their patients sick. So they just kept that one parent limit. So with that being said, my mom and my dad had to switch off times to see me because only one person could come into a room at a time. And you know, I was kind of by myself. I know I was with someone, but because I was kind of by myself at times, my best friend was this. What I'm holding is a stress ball. This stress ball I've had ever since I was in the hospital. And for the entire time that I was there, this was my homie. This is my go-to. because every time I was stressed, every time I had questions and I knew that no one could answer, I would just squeeze this, and it would help me just stay composed and stay in a good state. So this was my best friend at the time I was in the hospital. So yeah, thank you to whoever got this. I think it was my grandparents. So thank you guys for my stress ball. I still have it to this day. February 4th. This day was a very important day and special day to me, as a soccer club that is named City SC had a soccer clinic, which was a fundraiser for me. The soccer clinic was for kids that play competitive soccer. They did it, and they sent all the proceeds that they got to me. You guys might be wondering, why did they do this for a random kid that they probably don't know? They know me. Throughout my youth career playing, I played there. I played at City SC. I played there from, I'd say, middle school all the way till my senior year of high school. And I know all the coaches. I know a lot of players, some of them still being a good friend that I played with there. Thank you, City SC, for keeping me in your guys' heart. It is so, so, so amazing what you guys did for me while I was recovering. And you guys deserve nothing but praise. One coach in specific that I have great honor for is Glenn Malone. Glenn was the coach that allowed me to still love playing the beautiful game. Before my senior year, I didn't know if I wanted to keep playing anymore. I didn't. And Glenn, he convinced me to stay. And I knew Glenn way before I thought, I don't really want to play anymore. And when he heard that, he didn't want that to happen. And so my senior year, I wanted to be on a team where I would have the playing time guaranteed to me. Because at that time, all the players are trying to attract colleges to have them be seen so that they could get some scholarships and they could play soccer in college. And that was my goal. I wanted to go to a club where I knew that I would be playing full time. And I had the offers from different clubs saying that, yeah, I would be splitting time, but I would still be getting a lot of minutes. And what convinced me to stay was that Glenn told me I would be playing the entire time. I'd be the only goalkeeper. And I never had him as a coach, but when I would help him, help his team out because he needed a goalkeeper, I would have so much fun. I had so much fun because I loved his energy. I loved his style of coaching. And not only was I going to be the only goalkeeper on the team, he was going to be coaching my team. When I heard those two things, I knew, yeah, I'll stay. And it helped me get seen by my old college, University of St. Catherine. And I was able to play soccer in college. So Glenn, thank you for everything that you've done for not just me, but my family. Thank you. What was I talking about? I was talking about the fundraiser that City SC did for me. And not only did the coaches from City SC run the session, all the players, both on the men and women's team at my college, went out to go coach. It was just so amazing to see pictures. And it was cool because they made like a little poster, for me that was hanging on the gate walking into the field. And yeah, it was a really cool thing to see. When I saw the pictures, I was so stoked. February 5th. What happened on this day was I was making improvements. I was, you know, moving around the whole shebang. But the one highlight from this day that my mom, she wrote on Karen Bridge, is that she got a call from the doctor at 6:30 at night, and so she was kind of freaking out, like, what the heck, what's happening, is he okay. The reason why my mom got the call is because a nurse came in and I was awake and I was looking around, and before that it took someone to say, all right, Ethan, open your eye, look at us, for me to do that. And so I did this by myself. I did this with no command to do it. So it was a very, very huge day, because what that showed the doctors and my parents is that I was slowly but surely getting better. February 6th, the next day, when my mom, she came in, we had conversation, and I was able to say my name. I knew my name was Ethan, but the last name I got wrong. I believe that my full name was Ethan Alexis. My last name is Ibarra, but I said Alexis. Alexis is my sister. That's my sister's name, Alexis. And so when they would ask, what's your name, Ethan? I would say, Ethan Alexis. And even though I don't remember saying that, I think I have a very vivid memory of that. But what that really showed me was that I was missing my sister. If that was the name that was in my head, my brain was telling me, Ethan, you gotta see your sister. You gotta see her. Another thing that got me to open my eyes was my mom saying that Adriana wanted to talk to you. And as soon as I heard that, my eyes lit up. I know she's my ex-girlfriend, I know. But I just wanna say thank you, Adriana. Thank you for having my back through the most difficult part of my life. And you're the reason why I kept hope. I kept believing in myself. So thank you. Really, thank you. For the next couple days, I was mentally tired, because in the traumatic brain injury, getting tired easy is very common, because your brain can't do multiple things at once. So once it does one action for a certain amount of time, it's and it's not a normal certain amount of time for probably a couple minutes, you need to sleep. You need to go rest. And so every time I would do some kind of movement, I guess I would want to go sleep on my bed. And yeah, that was what I did. I don't have a vivid memory of this time, early February, but yeah, I was a very on and off kind of person when I wanted to work out. Another amazing picture that I got had to do with City SC. Before my accident, I was asked by Glenn if I wanted to be a coach for the club that I used to play for, and my immediate answer was, of course. The reason why I wanted to do it was because I thought, well, I'm in college, I'm on the team, and so my morning is just jam-packed. But the thing about coaching is the coaching happens at night. So I thought it would fit into my schedule perfectly. And not only that, I love seeing little kids improve in soccer and just gain their abilities in so many different things, whether that be kicking, whether that be movement, whether that be putting a gnarly cross, doing a bicycle kick. No little kids I've seen could do that, but I just like imagining that. But I really wanted to help kids improve. It's so amazing to see someone that you've worked with, whether that be in school, whether that be coaching, whether that be a cousin. When you guys work on certain things to help them get better at something and you see it in action, you see it happen, oh man, that makes you feel so good. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to gain that feeling of, man, that's amazing to see this person from when I started to now, such a big improvement. So that was the reason. And the picture that I was sent was a group of young boys who I was going to coach the next season before my accident. And in competitive soccer in California, the last tournament that feels like a World Cup at the end of the year it's called State Cup. And the picture that I got was the group of the boys that I was gonna coach the next season. Unfortunately, I couldn't because I had this injury. But they wore an armband. Each and every one of the players wore an armband that had my name and my number that I used for college. And every game they wore that armband. Oh man. It was such an amazing picture to see because it really showed me that I do have people supporting me. I do have people that are wanting me to succeed, wanting me to get better. And to see the boys that I was supposed to coach have that belief in me, that made me want to recover so much quicker. Oh man, that was a very, very important picture for me to see at that time. Other things that happened on that day was that the doctors had to put mitts on my hands so I didn't grab certain things. Because again, I was uncontrollable sometimes, and I would grab onto things that didn't need to be grabbed or touched. So they put mitts on my hands so that I didn't do that. That was me. Okay, I'm that guy. Another thing, my mom, she allowed me to have her phone because pretty sure one of my family members were FaceTiming and I wanted to see. And I don't remember it, but I guess I remembered how to take a screenshot on my phone. So once I knew that, I'm pretty sure I took 10 to 15 screenshots on my mom's phone, and I was just constantly just taking that screenshot of just anything. But crazy how your brain remembers how to do certain things when you're not thinking. You don't have your cognitive ability to be thinking, all right, I'm gonna screenshot right now. But your body remembers how to do it, so it just does it. Crazy. Crazy, 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 crazy. February 9th. This is a day when the physical therapist wanted me to start standing up and wanted to begin working on my movement and my balance and my motor control. And so it was a very important day for me when it came to improving. It's funny because I remember that in that month, in January and February, the Olympics were on in 2022. And I just put on the TV and I saw Olympics. All right, cool. Let me just watch that. And it was funny because my dad came in and he asked me, oh, Ethan, you're watching the Olympics? I was like, yeah, I am. And he was like, what are you watching? I was like, I have no idea. I just put it on because it's the Olympics. If it was soccer, I definitely would have said, oh, they're playing soccer. But because it was a sport that was not soccer, I had no idea what it was. I just put it on because it was the Olympics. And on February 9th, I was given my phone. And, oh, man. I should have... No one should have gave me back my phone. Because as soon as I got my phone, I started to text every single person that I could. And the thing about my texts was they weren't clear messages. At times, if I would send paragraphs. I would send paragraphs of absolute nothing. Because if I sent a paragraph, two or three of the words would be clear. The rest would just be absolute gibble. To the point where no one really understood what I was saying. But when I was texting, my parents said I looked like I knew exactly what I was saying. So even though it looked like it, I wasn't. Another thing that I did immediately when I got the phone was I went to Apple Music and I put on my favorite band of all time, and it's never going to change, the Beatles. And I put on their music. And oh man, I just needed to hear that. With music, for me, music is one of the most important things in my life, because I listen to music when I need that inspiration to do something. Every time I'm working out, every time I go on a run, music is mandatory for me. And when I heard that the Beatles being played, I just felt relieved. And that's an episode that I'm going to do, is the neuroscience behind music, because your brain, when it comes to music, oh man, it works. It works around it. And it's gonna be amazing to, you know, just to have a discussion about that. I'm hoping to bring someone in that could help me, you know, learn more about music therapy. Because I feel like that's so important, because even though I didn't have a music therapist, I know that music helped me through my recovery process. I know it. And it's still kind of like my recovery process, even now. Next day, February 10th. that was the day when the PTs wanted to begin my movement, my motor control. And even though I was always just, you know, giving my best effort, on that day I did not want to do anything. I didn't. I wanted to just lay in my bed and sleep and not move and just be on my phone. I feel like that was the reason. I feel like because I got my phone, I knew that I could just lay in bed and watch videos and text friends and do everything like that. So I thought there's no need for me to be walking when all I can do right now is just be on my phone. So that probably was a reason why I didn't want to work on my movement that day. But on that day, when my dad came, because when my mom was in the hospital with me, I didn't want to do the movement, didn't want to walk around. But when my dad came in, for the first time, I was able to take the stress ball and throw it to my dad. And he was able to throw it back and I would catch it. Got to the point where I remember, I'm pretty sure I have a video. When I was throwing it, my dad was saying, "Oh, don't catch it with your right, catch it with your left." And he started throwing my left and I was catching with my left. And it was crazy. It was so crazy how my motor abilities were slowly but surely coming back. That really allowed my family to see again that I was making improvements. Another thing on February 10th was, like I said, about my last name being Alexis and missing my sister, and through my phone texting my friends but not able to see them, I began really, really, really missing my friends. It got to the point where when I would send texts to my friends, I would say, "Hey, come pick me up right now, take me back home." Imagine getting that from someone who is in the hospital and getting a text from them saying, "Oh, come pick me up and take me back home, all right?" It'd be like, you'd want to say you want to, but you have to say you can't. So I remember getting responses saying like, "Oh, like when the time's right, Ethan, when the time's right, I'll pick you up." Which basically meant I'm not picking you up right now, but when the time comes, when you're back home, I'll see you. But just not in using that sentence in a way that I felt relieved. So the next day, February 11th, at my house, we have all the channels to watch all the leagues. Now you need to have subscriptions to everything in order to watch certain, not every league or every tournament, but one subscription covers one league and you have to buy another one to cover another league. But in the early 2022, my TV still had the channels. So I was expecting that in the hospital, I would have the channels to the games, because I missed watching soccer. I missed it so bad. And when I was looking at the channels, I remember they didn't have any channels. They didn't have any channels that had games. Yeah, I was very upset. But the one thing that I learned while in high school by my JV coach, Professor Hackbarth, hope you're doing well if you're watching. He showed me a website where I could watch soccer games for free. And because I had my phone, I was able to do that. So I didn't quite care as much that I couldn't watch it on the TV, because I knew I had my phone and I could do it. But at the same time, I wanted to be able to have a game on my TV, but at the same time be on my phone. You know, so I could do two things at once. But because I can't watch anything on the TV, I just needed to use my phone to just watch the game. I can send text. Oh, boo-hoo, huh? Boo-hoo. But yeah, I wish that there was soccer channels when I was in the hospital. I really do. before my accident, whenever I would sleep in my room, I would sleep on my stomach because I was just very comfortable sleeping like that. And I wanted to do that in the hospital. But the reason why I couldn't is because I had all the tubes that were attached to me. But unfortunately, I would still do that. I would still try to do that. And so it got to the point where doctors had to come in and lay me on my back, like had to move me so I was laying off my back. So none of the wires, none of the tubes were cut off or removed. So thank you for doing that. I know it was probably a hassle, but thank you for keeping my tubes in me. So funny, because I'm pretty sure I remember talking, sending texts to my friends about this, but what my mom said on the carrying bridge is that night on February 11th, one of the nurses came in to check on me, and they said, "Is everything okay?" Then I was like, "Yeah, I'm good." And before they walked out, I told them, "Oh, one quick question." They're like, "Yeah, what's up?" It's like, "Do you think you guys could get me Oscars tonight?" Oscars is a Mexican restaurant in San Marcos that I would go to all the time because they had a drive-thru that I could go through, and they had the best carnitas fries. So I was really wanting that. And I asked one of the doctors if they could go to Oscars and pick me up some carnitas fries. They didn't listen to my request, which is unfortunate, but yeah, that was on my mind. So it was a good attempt. It was a good effort from me to, you know, to ask that question, but unfortunately they weren't able to do that for me. Dang. On February 12th, my sister was able to finally come see me. And the reason why she was able to come see me is because my mom really, really, really begged the doctors to allow my sister to come in. The reason why she was not able to come in is because she wasn't 18 yet. She was still, what, 15, 16? She was a sophomore in high school. So she still wasn't able to come in and see me. But on that day, the doctors allowed my sister to come in, which was really cool, because when she came in, I was just chatting with her. I remember taking her phone and going on her Snapchat and taking a picture of both of us and putting it on her story. And I remember Lexi was telling me, "Oh, look who responded, look who responded." And I was like, "Oh, how are they doing? They're doing good? Cool." So it was really nice, because I really enjoyed her presence, because I hadn't seen her in a while. Two, three weeks. So it was really nice. The album that got me through my injury, really, Dawn FM by The Weeknd. Abel Tesfaye, thank you for making that album, because listening to that, oh man, it just got me. It got me stoked. It got me motivated. It got me energized to go through each and every day, because I knew that if that music was playing in the background, I could do anything. I could do anything. I'm that person who listens to music. Say a new song came out and I wanted to listen to it, and I thought it was really good. I'm that kind of person who puts that song on repeat for the next month. That's me. I'm that kind of person. So it's nice, because this album came out a month before my accident, so it was fairly new. But all throughout my injury, even after, when I got home, I played it nonstop. So I just want to say thank you to The Weeknd for making that album, because that got me through. And if you guys haven't listened to that album, listen to it right now. It's so good. So good. And even though that album came out a couple weeks before my accident, when the doctors or my parents or anyone that was came to visit me put on the album, I was able to remember the beats, remember the rhythm, remember the lyrics to each and every song. Again, the reason being was I listened to that album each and every day. So it was probably very annoying for the people that had to constantly put on that album. But for me, oh man, joy. That's all I felt, just joy when that album came on. At that time, because I was so used to being in the hospital, I took the nurses and the doctors as just homies, just friends that just came to see me every once in a while. When they would walk into my room, instead of being like, oh, like, hi, what are we doing today? I'd just be like, what's up? Yo, how are you doing? Got to the point where I was just so just chillax with them. And they were like that too. It was really nice. It felt like I had some friends there because I was able to talk the way I wanted to talk to them. And on February 12th, remember my Glasgow coma scale? Remember how I was at a zero for, I don't even know how, but I was at a zero. They told my parents that I was now at a 13 to 14 out of 15. So huge, huge, huge announcement for them to receive. And it was really, that really showed my progression in the hospital. February 12th, I was there January 25th to the 12th, 17, 18 days. And I went from a zero to a 13 to 14 on the scale. I'm blessed. It was so funny because when my mom came to visit me, I was working on my cognitive abilities with her and, you know, my movement. And when she left, she was about to leave, she said bye. And before she left, I said, hey mom, quick question. I was like, she was like, what? I was like, so are we gonna dip soon? Meaning, are we gonna leave this hospital soon? But I said it so nonchalant, like, yo mom, are we gonna dip soon? She probably looked at me like, why is that my son? yeah, that's how comfortable I was in the hospital at that time, because I was just so used to everything. It's nice because it really showed how amazing the nurses and the doctors were there, because instead of it feeling to me like I'm in a prison and I can't do anything, it felt like I was just hanging out with some friends. So thank you the nurses and the doctors at Paloma Hospital for making my experience so good. On the 13th, this was a very important day when it came to music, because when my mom came in, she brought my guitar. She asked the nurses if she could do that, and they said, of course. And even though my sentence making and my speech was not quite up to par yet, I was able to play my guitar and sing the lyrics to the songs. It's really crazy because why was I not able to talk in normal sentences, but when it came to a song that I like or a song that I wanted to listen to, I would remember the lyrics of the songs? Crazy. And I looked it up, and you know what, I'll wait for that episode to come out to talk about that. But crazy, don't you think? Crazy. And when my mom brought in my guitar, I played her favorite song that she always wanted me to learn when I got my guitar my sophomore year of high school, and it was Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. And it wasn't a clear playing of the song, but I remembered the chords. And it was funny because I remember that I knew that I played the chord wrong, so I fixed it. I didn't just keep on playing. I fixed it because I it didn't sound right, so I needed to find the right chord. And because that was the song that my mom loved, she began crying, and all the nurses that listened, they began crying too. And the one thing about that song that I didn't put two and two together there was that Eric Clapton wrote that song because his son passed away. And now I realized why my mom was in tears when I played that song in the hospital. Because she was kind of in that same stage that Eric Clapton was at in that moment when he wrote that song. And that song now, it means so much to me. It means so much to me. And I'm happy that I made my mom smile. Not necessarily cry, but I made her have a little smile. Another thing that happened on that day was that I was able to, I was improving on eating my food. The one thing I was able to eat was applesauce. And it got to the point where I was able to consume the applesauce. And so what the doctors wanted to test is my swallowing ability. And they put me on that test and they saw that my results were really good, and they requested that my tracheotomy was pulled out. So that really showed again my improvement that I made over my time in the hospital. On February 14th, the doctors, they saw the improvements that I made, and they discharged me from the intermediate care unit to the acute rehab facility. And that really showed to everyone that I was making improvements. I was getting there. I was getting there. I remember that they told me, "Oh, Ethan, you're gonna go to acute rehab, and you're gonna leave this room and go to another room." I was like, "All right, like, what is it? Like, right down the hall?" Because I remember the hallway, because I remember my walks that I would do. And yeah, I was just like, "Oh, it's probably like right next door." And they were like, "No, it's in a different building." That intrigued me. So I was really excited. I was really excited about that, because I was thinking, I'm gonna have a good little field trip day and go to another building. And I was really excited. That day, I was slowly but surely gaining my memory back. I was able to say the names of my grandparents and their last name, and my family, and some of my friends. And it was such a good improvement on my state when I first entered the hospital to that point. It was funny because the PTs walked me that day, and they knew I was a soccer player. And so they asked me, "Oh, what position do you play?" And I said, "Oh, goalkeeper." And they're like, "Oh, no way, you play goalkeeper?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And even though I didn't have a lot of memory from the past that were in my brain at that time, I was still able to say all the positions in the starting 11 for a 4-3-3 formation. And I was able to say, I was very specific. I remember I said, the three midfielders, there's two midfielders that are above the defensive mid. And the defensive mid is, he stays behind the two center mids because he needs to control that gap between the center backs and the midfielders. And the nurses looked at me like, the doctors looked at me like, what is this kid saying? And so that really showed that that's how important soccer is to my life. Where if I could state the reasons and what positions do at a time where I was not able to fully think, wow. Wow. So it was a really cool thing I remember. February 16th. This is the day when I relearned what ice cream was. Ice cream became my best friend from that point on. To the point where I would have ice cream for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and for dessert. And it got to the point where it was so bad that I felt so bad for always asking for ice cream, to the point where I told myself, all right, Ethan, don't request. Say I wanted four cups of ice cream. I would tell myself, all right, Ethan, there's other people in this hospital that probably want ice cream too. So order two things of ice cream and then ask for a carton of milk. And I would scrape the ice cream into the milk jug and then mix the milk and the ice cream together. So it'd be kind of like an extended ice cream that I made for myself. That's where I was at for my nutrition. The reason why the doctors were cool with it is because it was something that I didn't need to chew. I could just swallow it. So they're like, yeah, if the kid wants ice cream, give him some ice cream. I remember sometimes when they'd be like, oh, Ethan, like not right now. So they were watching over me, but I would take full advantage of the ice cream. On the 17th of February, the doctors and the nurses said that there are two rooms that opened up and that I can move in, but for some reason, he's not able to go. No reason for at that time, but they're like, yeah, he just needs to stay here in the intermediate care and then he could go to the acute rehab. So I had to just stay there for a couple more days, but it was cool because while I was still in the intermediate care, I was able to see a family friend who is an ICU nurse. Her name is Brittany. Hi, Brittany. Hope you're doing good, if you're watching. And she came to see me. It was really cool to know someone that worked there and to know that, yeah, she's at the hospital that I'm attending at. But it was just really cool to have a familiar face that I know that was working in the hospital. It made me feel a lot more comfortable. And again, I asked my mom at the end of that day, before she left, if she could take me back home. So that was a question that I asked everyone, whether that be through text, whether that be in person, please just take me home. I wanted to get out. The next day, on the 18th, I had ice cream for breakfast, of course. Come on. Who wouldn't? And on the 18th, I was able to move from the intermediate care to acute rehab. And because I knew I was gonna move rooms, and I was just like, all right, well, this is probably just gonna take a few minutes. And then they told me, oh, Ethan, in order to get to the acute rehab facility, you gotta go in an ambulance. And I was like, why? And that's what I asked in my head. I didn't say it out loud, but I was just like, oh, why? But then I was like, this is gonna be fun. Like, I'm gonna be in the ambulance going on the freeway or something, and probably be there for an hour and a half until I get to the acute rehab facility. So I was really stoked. I remember my mom gave me some snacks. She brought in some snacks that I could have. And I was planning, before I got into the ambulance, I was planning, all right, I'm gonna have that snack right as I get into the ambulance. And then 30 minutes in, I'll check my phone. And 30 minutes in, I'll have that snack. And then when I'm about 5 minutes from there, I will have this snack. So I had the snacks planned. I had them planned. I was ready to go. And so in order for me to go get to the ambulance, they had to wheel me in the wheelchair. I remember that. Went to the elevator, went down, then I was put into the ambulance. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is really cool. Should I put it on my Instagram story? Should I put it on my Snapchat? Like, what should I do? How could I tell people? This is gonna be sick. And I was ready to go. And the doctors, they got me situated, and off we went. And I was excited. I was like, oh my goodness, like what album, what music should I listen to? And like, or what YouTube video should I watch? And then we were driving. I was like, cool. Like, I had my first snack ready to go. I was about to eat it. And then the ambulance stopped. It's like, what? Is everything okay? And everyone got out of the ambulance. They came to me and they're like, how was that, Ethan? Are you good? I was like, yeah, I'm good, but why do we stop? And they're like, we're here. I was like, what? I was like, what do you mean we're here? And I was just so confused. I was like, am I getting into another ambulance and then going? Or like, what? Little did I know, intermediate care and the rehab facility, it was about a 2-minute walk from each other. So, planning my snacks, there's no need for that. Because in about 30 seconds, I was able to get to my my rehab facility. So, I ruined it. What a waste of my planning abilities. What a waste of my cognitive abilities, you know? That probably used so much energy for me to plan and for absolutely no reason. So, yeah, I was pretty bummed that day, even though, you know, I was happy for going to the rehab facility, but it just bummed me out that day. It bummed me out. February 19th. I was in my new room. I was ready to go. I was really stoked because I heard that my days are getting closer to it, like to the time where I could get home. So with that being said, I was very, very focused on, all right, let's do it. Like, let's go home. So again, asking my parents and my friends to come pick me up. And unfortunately, they didn't. Thank you guys for not listening. But one thing that I did on February 19th is I played a phone game that you guys probably know. It's called Candy Crush. Candy Crush, I played it before my injury and I had so much fun playing. It was very, very relaxing. But unfortunately for me, I spent $400 on Candy Crush. Because I don't remember. I'm blessed I don't remember, because if I did, my mom would hate me. And she still has hatred about that game. But the $400 that it was charged to was my mom's credit card, because her credit card was put on our family plan. So all of a sudden she gets a bill saying that $400 was spent on Candy Crush. And my mom was pretty pissed, pretty mad about that. And I again, I don't remember. again. I really don't remember. But I think the reason why I did that is because after, when you play Candy Crush, after your 5 lives are used up, you have to wait like 30 minutes to get 1 new life, and then another 30 minutes to get another new life, and then all the way to 5. But you could pay when you use all 5 lives, you could pay to get new lives back. So when I was playing and I ran out of my lives, I would buy new lives. And I kept on doing that every time I ran out of lives. And it's so funny because a couple months ago when I hopped on, I played Candy Crush, I was realizing I had a bunch of little gifts that I was able to use while I was playing. I was like, why do I have so many gifts that I'm able to use? Like, no one has this. Like, what happened? It was probably because I spent $400 on the dang game. So yeah, I spent $400 on Candy Crush. Love you, Mom. Hope you still love me too. At my rehab facility, I met my new therapy doctor, my physical therapy doctor, and a moment that lit my heart up was he asked me, I remember, what sports I played, if I played any sports and what sport I played. I said, oh yeah, I play soccer. He's like, what team do you support? I was like, oh, I support Arsenal. And I was saying that with like a gloomy face because at the time, 2022, we were all right. We weren't the best. We're mid. We're a mid team. The response that I got from him, oh man, it made my heart skip a beat. He said this, oh, the Gunners. No words. Just let that sink in. He said, oh, the Gunners. The amount of relief that I got after hearing that, endless. I found my new best friend at the rehab facility. I really did. Because he didn't say, oh, you like Arsenal? He said, oh, the Gunners? Thank you. Thank you. Oh man, what a moment that is. What a moment. I was able to FaceTime my sister, Adriana, and 2 very important people in my recovery process, Brian and Bella. You guys, thank you so much for all the support that you gave to my family. They needed you guys, and you guys had a very, very vital role for them to feel good, for them to feel happy. So thank you guys. I was able to just let them know that I'm at the rehab facility and I'm getting close to, you know, just to going home. And I remember they were all really excited and just really, really, really happy to see my face. And I was really happy to see them too. So it was a really good way to finish the day. On the 20th of February, in order for me to get out of bed and start to go on my physical therapy journey at the rehab facility, was I needed to wear this, which is a belt that went around my stomach and my waist that the therapist could hold just to make sure that I kept my balance. This. And my helmet. Say something fell on my head, it would be protected. So this helmet was a very important object in my life, even after my accident, even when I got home from the hospital. Because I needed to wear this until my second surgery. Because the second surgery, what it did was it it put something in my head to make my head look like there is a bone there and it's protected, because before that surgery, that my left side of my head was, it looked like a big dent was just in it, because there was no bones, because with my injury, half my skull fractured. So it just looked like a big, big dent. So I needed to wear this helmet just in case if anything fell on my head, it'd be protected. If I fell, it's protected, just for protection, this helmet. And on that day, I was able to see my sister and Adriana. They weren't able to come into my room and not be in the parking lot either, because I wasn't able to go outside and see them. So what they did was, because when I was at the rehab facility, it was one floor, and all the rooms had a window. And so what my sister and Adriana did was they parked in the parking lot and they walked out. And they found my window to my room. And when they did, and I looked to the left and I saw them, oh man, it really made my day. And so what they did was they went on a call, and they called me, and I was able to talk to them and see them. And it was really, really, really good to see them and just to have a conversation. And it was so close to the time when I was able to go, but wasn't quite there yet. On the 21st, not only did my sister and Adriana come, but with them, they brought Brian and Bella. And all four of them being able to see them, it was really, really cool. It was really, really special. It really allowed me to keep my hope and to keep my motivation to going home. Slowly but surely, I was going home. On the 22nd of February, I started to do more things by myself. I began giving myself a shower by myself, not needing anyone in the room. I remember that day because when my dad came, he was with me through my therapy with the physical therapist and the speech therapist, and I remember I played a game of beer pong against my dad. And no, there was no beer in the cups. It was water. Don't worry. But yeah, I played cup pong with my dad. I loved how competitive it got, because being a soccer player, if I was losing, I needed to get back. I needed to get back and win it. So when that game was presented to me and my dad, I was ready to go. I wanted to destroy my dad. So, and I think I did. I'm pretty sure I did. I'll check with him and to see, but I'm pretty sure I did. I'm pretty sure. And that day, I was able to see my grandma and grandpa, because they came to my window. It was so amazing to see their face and just talk with them. And again, it really showed me that I had so many people by my side through it all, and just seeing them and knowing that my day's slowly but surely coming. On that day, I was told that my release day was gonna be the 25th of that month. Taking you guys back to the first day when I got to the hospital, the doctors didn't know how long I would have to stay in the hospital. Dr. Jaswani told my parents that it could be up to 7 months to a year. That was the only estimate that he gave to them, 7 months to a year. On February 25th, that would be exactly 1 month. Exactly 1 month. I'm so blessed. I'm so, so blessed. Oh my goodness, that really made my day to hear that statement. And on the 24th, I was accepted into Scripps Brain Injury Day Program in Encinitas, California. I had no idea that I had to go into a day program And I was kind of like, oh, do I need to do that? Like, is that like a necessary thing that I need to do in order to be released from the hospital? Like, why? And my mom was saying, no, this is needed for you to keep on regaining your abilities. And I was thinking, they're releasing me from the hospital because they know that I have my abilities back. Like, why'd I have to keep on working on this? And so I was kind of like, ugh. Because I was thinking, when I got home, I just got to chill out. I just got to just hang low and wait to go back to school until I feel right. And, have it be on my time. That could have been the process for me. But I'm so blessed that my mom and my parents put me into the Scripps Brain Injury Day program, because I found out so many things through that program. All the people that are there, they have a special place in my heart. So I'm gonna have another episode about that. Stay tuned for that. But yeah, I was accepted into the Scripps Brain Injury Day program. And on February 24th, Arsenal had a game against Wolves. And that game really played with my emotions, because Arsenal were 1-0 down for most of the game. And it was like the 70th minute, and I was like, no way, like, we're gonna lose to Wolves. Like, dude, what a waste. When I was watching the game, I was on my phone on my bed, because my mom was talking to the physical therapist who was about to come pick me up and do the exercises with me. And so while my mom and the physical therapist were talking, I was watching the game. And late 70th, like 78th, maybe 80th, Arsenal scored to make it 1-1. And I wanted to yell. Pepe scored. Nicola Pepe. And I wanted to celebrate, but it was a draw. It was the equalizing goal. So I was like, let's go. And I was just like, all right, one more goal. And I didn't want to yell because I didn't want to scare my mom or the therapist, because if I were to yell, they would be like, oh, Ethan, what's wrong? So I kept it very quiet. And then the 90th minute, Lacazette scored to make it 2-1. I didn't yell, but what I did was more concerning to them than me yelling. Because what I did, instead of yelling, instead of just being loud, I was kind of having a spasm. It looked like I was having a spasm attack. So when they scored, I was celebrating, but instead of yelling, I was going like, squeezing my hands and just wanting to yell, but I was holding it in. That was horrible. That, especially for my mom and the therapist being right there, they were so concerned. They're like, Ethan, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? And I scared the heck out of them. And when they told me, what's wrong? Like, I responded, I said, Arsenal scored in the last minute. I'm so excited. They're like, Ethan. My mom said, Ethan. I was like, I'm so sorry. I just didn't want to yell. So even though it was a very happy moment that I'll never forget, it was very scary for those who were around, because they were freaking out about me. So yeah, we won last minute, but I scared the PT and my mom. So it was kind of scary at the same time. After the game, I went with the physical therapist to go on a walk, and we went outside, and I was excited to go outside, because I was thinking, ooh, I can't wait to see this place. Like, where am I at? I still, that cognitive ability to remember where I was at, I didn't have it. I didn't know. And so when we walked down the hill, I was like, oh my goodness, this place is so beautiful. Like, I really wonder where we're at. And then once we got to the bottom, we walked back up to the top. And I was like, oh man, like, I can't wait to see where we are when we go home. Like, I can't wait to see what road we take, how long it takes for me to get home. So just like how I was planning my ambulance ride, that was 30 seconds, I was thinking, this is gonna be a fun ride back home, because it's gonna be a long, long way to get back home. How wrong I was. Because like I said, the hospital was about 6 minutes from my house, but I had no idea. I had no idea. And on the walk, it was funny, because on the walk, I was able to talk to my physical therapist, because like I said, he was the person who said that I supported the Gunners, and it got me so excited. On my walk, I gave him the full starting 11 of the team that year. I'm pretty sure I could get it down. In goal, Ramsdale. Right back, it was Tomiyasu. Left back, Kieran Tierney. Left center back, Gabriel. Right center back, Ben White. Two center mids, Xhaka, Partey. Attacking mid, Odegaard. Right mid, Bukayo. Left mid, Martinelli. Up top, Lacazette. I was able to say that. I was able to describe what I liked about certain players, what I didn't like, why I feel like he needs to be replaced. I had the whole shebang. I did. And it was really cool that I was able to connect with my physical therapist, because he also enjoyed soccer. So it really made my experience with him so much better. And on the 25th of February, that was my graduation day. That was my moving out day from the hospital and being able to go back home. That day, my mom, my dad, my sister, and Adriana came to see me, to give me hugs, and that was a very special day to me. Because when I was walking out of the room, they gave me a bell. And everyone who goes home gets to ring the bell before they leave. And when I was walking to the bell, all the nurses and all the doctors were in two lines. And I was giving them high fives, and it really felt like I accomplished something. And when I rang that bell, I did it. That's when I realized I did it. And I had to thank them. So even though it wasn't a long speech that I said, I just said, thank you guys so much for all the help. You guys are so important for my recovery. And after that, I was able to give my parents hugs, see everyone, and walk out those doors. Not in a wheelchair, on my own 2 feet. And like I said, I didn't know about my house being 6 minutes away from my house. So again, I wanted to see the drive. I wanted to see how to get back home. In 2 minutes, we turned onto a street that I remembered. It was right by my house. So I was like, we're so close to the house, aren't we? They're like, yeah, we are. And when I got home, I got to see Cooper, my old dog. And to see him, it was so relieving, because he was so excited to see me. I could tell that he really missed me. And I missed him too. I really, really did. On February 25th, 2022, I was able to go home. From the doctor thinking that my injury is going to last and going to have me stay in the hospital for seven months to a year, I did it in a month. The reason why I wanted to do it faster than what was said is because I was an athlete. When your coach tells you, oh, I expect you to do this by next practice, you want to do it before that practice ends. Because you want to prove to him, no, I can do it. I don't have to give it more time. I'll do it right now. So I'm blessed that I was a player, because it allowed me to keep working, to keep striving for more. From January 25th all the way through February 25th, my life changed. It changed my life in so many ways. I'm so blessed and thankful for everyone who had my back through the lowest point of my life. You guys kept me with this smile on my face. You guys helped me get through each and every day because my goal was to see you guys again. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for listening to my second episode. Hopefully that this gives you guys a better understanding of how my life was. And I'm so excited to keep this journey going, to keep telling you guys the steps and the journey, the things that I had to do in order to become back to my old self. And I'll be honest, I'm not my old self anymore. I'm changed. And I'm so grateful for that. Because before my accident, I didn't think as well as I do now. But now, I understand there's only so much time here. So make the most of it. I hope you all have a great, great, great rest of your day. And always remember one thing. Live every day like it's your last. And always keep that beautiful smile on your face. Because you're here. You're right here.